This week, we explore a paper on what Freemasonry means in the context of Rosicrucianism. What are you due as a Mason? Titles? Honors? Lapel pins? This 1940s author didn't think so. Next, we'll look at an issue that's largely politicized, entitlement. But what happens when we depoliticize it and talk about tackling it the Masonic way? We'll wrap it up with a piece defining Masonic education from a past Grand Master of Washington in 1943. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 435. Well, I'm recording this early, as you probably guessed, is my style. I'm about ready to get ready to head off to the Southeastern Masonic Symposium of Education being held in Tampa, Florida. And you're listening to this, and it's over, and I'm back, probably, and I'm probably in bed getting ready for a great Monday at work. I actually love Mondays. I hope you do. Maybe you don't. I don't know. This week on the program, we've got three articles, as you heard about, and let's go ahead and pay the bills and get right into the education. All right, so it's time to pay the bills. How do we make this show happen? This show happens because you, the listeners, help us out. So how do you help us out, though? Well, since July of 2011, this podcast has been here waiting for you every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Consistency is the name of the game. We are creating weekly Masonic education for anyone interested in Freemasonry and its kindred sciences. This is not a small endeavor. It requires hours of work each week on top of what we all have, right? We have work, kids, spouses, and we've got a few ways to help support this show. Really, our two main ways are through donations. You can become a contributor, a fellow, or a producer, and you can do that through Patreon. We have a $2 a month contributor level. You get your name on our website as a contributor. If you're a fellow, that's a $5 a month donation, and that puts your name on the website. I send you a card in the mail. I handwrite these cards when you do those donations. I don't have these things filled out. They're not pre-printed. None of that. This is me really trying to say thanks. Meaningful thanks. And of course, the producer level. Our producer level is $10 a month. You get the name on the website, a thank you card in the mail. And also with that, I'll send you the producer's pin also. Now, that's on Patreon. We have a lot of people who like to support us through PayPal. We offer those same exact perks. The contributor, the fellow, the producer, with all the same stuff through PayPal, a subscription model. So you can do either one of those things, or you can make a one-time gift through PayPal and just say, hey, I'm going to send you $2, or hey, I'm going to send you $3 one time, whatever the case is. I appreciate all of it. It offsets the cost of this podcast. Something to keep in mind is that we also sell the producer's pin by itself. It's $10. I have a Mason's Lady decal, and of course the It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry book that I co-wrote with John Ruark that has rave reviews all over Amazon.com, and you can get it on Amazon, not autographed, and you can get it on Audible also. All of the money that comes in through this stuff offsets the cost of putting this program together. And I want you to remember that you're the producer of the program. And in the last 10 years, Masonic education has come a long way. Is it a coincidence? Maybe. But we have to keep this ship on course. We're always pushing for better lodge experiences, Masonic education, and this show offers a way to assist people in coming up with new ideas and things to bring to lodge and to educate new brothers and people interested in the craft. So I would just say, if you're already a producer, a fellow, or a contributor, or you've donated cash at some point, or bought a pin, or whatever you've done for us, thank you, thank you, thank you. All right. To those of you who have assisted us through all of the ways you can help this, I just want to say thank you so much for all of what you're able to do, and a special thanks to our contributors, our fellows, and our producers, whether you're on PayPal or on Patreon. It means a whole heck of a lot. I really appreciate it. Now, as we get into Masonic education this week, I did have a quick announcement. Something that I've been involved in for the better part of 2 years has now reached fruition, and we officially launched. So, what I would like to invite you to do, if you are so inclined, is to check out the MasonicLegacySociety.com. Want to know more? Great. Visit the website. It is not connected to WCY Podcast. It is Masonic. And I just wanted to let you all know that it exists and that I think you will find it intriguing and very much worthwhile. So again, check out www.MasonicLegacySociety.com. You can follow it on Instagram as well. And that's it. Let's get into the education. The first piece I have this week is called What Does Masonry Mean? It's a paper that was read before the Colorado College of Rosicrucians on October 29, 1942, by Frater Byron C. Larkham. What does Masonry mean? Is probably the one question that comes the closest to being of universal interest to members of our craft. When, as an uninitiate, each one of us was told that Freemasonry is a system of morality veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols, we in all probability failed to receive any meaning from that statement. I know that it did not have any particular meaning at that time, so far as I was concerned. I wanted to become a member of the fraternity, and the words said on my initiation were of secondary importance. So it was necessary that quote-unquote light be given me before an understanding of the great symbolism provided could in even a small measure be attained. That statement of the senior deacon, when first read or spoken only a few times by anyone, if not studied, has no meaning beyond a mere statement of apparent fact. But, to one who has eyes to see behind the hidden meanings of the ritual, a vast field of research is slowly opened to be studied and applied. The full meaning behind the statement is so vast that for any one man to master its full import is too great a task for accomplishment in the short time allotted to each mortal in his brief journey through earthly life. What Masonry means to one man is, in most instances, something entirely different from what it means to another, to the past master or other member who has served his lodge faithfully and long. It might mean the opportunity for service to one who is daily in contact with the sordid affairs of life in the raw. As, for instance, a lawyer or a policeman, it might become a place to receive inspiration and a chance to renew his faith in mankind. To that venerable old Mason who has passed many winters chatting with a tiler, it might mean the opportunity of again having fellowship with true and trusty brothers, or of establishing those high principles taught when both points of the compasses become elevated above the square. To the newly made Mason, it can mean a chance of securing light. These of necessity are only a few of the many things that Masonry is or ought to be. For myself, I must say that what good I have been able to receive from the life can be attributed to the limited studies which I have undertaken. Maybe only a few corners of rough ashlar may have been knocked off by the common gavel, but I believe, I may safely say, that the easiest way of expressing what Masonry means to me is that light is synonymous with life. When a candidate is in the natal state, Masonically speaking, he is bound symbolically by the cable toe of misunderstanding and receives or takes his first upright step after prayer has been offered in his behalf by the extended right hand. He is given an encouraging lift and is taught that his trust in the unseen presence of the invisible one God is truly well founded. In his immediate case, his trust is in the senior deacon, and it behooves that officer, or whoever is so acting at the time, to be true to his engagement. From there, the candidate advances step by step from the west toward the east, returning from the east to the west by way of the south, always keeping the book of holy law to the right. His first stopping place is at the symbolical foundation of the esoteric world, represented by the northeast corner, shown in our symbolism by one of the two perpendicular parallel lines in the ancient mysteries. The northeast corner was represented in the chronology of those times as the summer solstice. From there, his circumambulation takes him to the southeast corner, the winter solstice, shown by the other parallel line. Finally, he reaches the center after being raised from the dead level to the perpendicular and gazing upon the book of holy law. He is now ready to begin that real search for truth, which should be the earnest quest of all Master Masons. Masonry provides keys lost for many ages and now only partially recovered, which aid the traveler in his search. As an entered apprentice to which degree many are still bound, his needs must render service. As a fellow craft, his advice is symbolized through the poise attained by transmutation of the material provided. Finally, as a Master Mason, the proof that part of the lessons have been learned is shown by his attainment of understanding and compassion, and that he has found that for which a substitute has been provided. These are usually delineated upon the Master's carpet of youth, manhood, and age. I hope that someday, Masonically speaking, I may be privileged to advance to even the second step. The emblems and symbols of our craft teach certain truths that are, in a sense, obligations, which, whether given as such or not, the craft in the past has been one of the greatest influences in the world for the true advancement of humanity. The challenge is given to us as Masons to live according to the lessons taught in our symbolisms, to look within our own lives, that we will still reflect ourselves in our fraternity, that it will continue to be the same force for good, not only now, but for all time to come. If civilization survives, we must not fail. In conclusion, it might be pointed out that if 2/3 of our membership to be conservative would live up to their obligations instead of trying to collect their dues, most of the problems confronting humanity at present would of necessity be solved. And that dream of a place where all that the soul would experience shall be perfect praise, and all that it shall express shall be perfect bliss, would become an accomplished fact. Let's say, are we going to fail to accept this challenge? Let's go. All right, there you have this great piece, again from the 1940s, and originally a Rosicrucian piece, no doubt presented at the SRIA or an SRIF. Somewhat of an inspirational piece there. He ends it with the words, "Let's go," in all capitals. And he also alludes to the fact that many Masons seem to be hung up on something that maybe we shouldn't be hung up on so much. He says the dues, but they're in quotes, so he's not being literal about the dues. He's talking about something else, maybe what should be gained by service rendered. Is he talking about titles, lapel pins, certificates, honorifics? Who knows? But it seems to be that he's very concerned that we should be thinking about the craft in terms of what it can teach us rather than the wages we receive.
Hello, WCY podcast listeners. With 2 months to go in ticket sales, only a few tickets to this year's Mid-Atlantic EsotericCon are left. Act now and get yours before they're all gone. We're really excited about what we have planned for this year's event. 6 great speakers, RJ Johnson, Joseph Wages, Angel Millar, Don McAndrews, David Bacon, and Chuck Dunning. We have the already sold-out brew night at Sinistral Brewing Company on Friday night, June the 12th. This year's Sunday event will be a private guided tour of the George Washington Masonic Memorial. And new to this year's event will be a tarot card reading for all attendees. We're really excited about what we have lined up for this year's event. Please see our website, Facebook, and Eventbrite pages for more information on how to purchase tickets.
So the next piece that I have for you actually comes from the Masonic Philosophical Society. I've read a few of their posts in the past, and this one also comes from one of their more accomplished writers that I rather enjoy, Kristen Wilson Slack. I've read a few of her pieces before. She's wonderful. This comes from May 10th, 2017, and it's called Entitlement. Do you want some of this? And what I think is interesting about this, in this day and age, there is a lot said about entitlement processes, and people say millennials just are entitled to things or what have you. And this attacks this same kind of thought process, but connects it back to Freemasonry and gives us some direction maybe. So let's dive into this and let's see what we think when we're done with it. It's difficult to talk about things like this sometimes, and that's good because the difficult conversations, the difficult things to listen to are the things that make us think. And if we can think a little bit different about them, good. So, let's tackle entitlement. Do you want some of this? Entitlement, a word bandied about often by many citizens of the United States. I wanted to explore it because in a recent conversation it was used akin to arrogance, and I wasn't sure that was correct. The word entitlement doesn't appear in the English language until 1782, and I was unable to find its original source. However, in a very interesting article on entitlement, in a blog called Language Log, the author is investigating the question of when the term went from being a positive term to being a negative term. Kristen Wilson Slack then links the original article. Specifically, we North Americans now tend to use the term in a negative way. A sense of entitlement is used to discuss someone who is feeling privileged or feeling they need special privileges when they are not due them. Additionally, the government uses it in a negative way to indicate the same thing. Entitlement programs are seen as those programs which feed the parasites in society and are not empowering. Some elements of society tend to refer to them as quote-unquote handouts. Others see entitlements as a duty to care for fellow human beings. These references and discussions lead one to see a culture that seems to be pushing the idea of activity and work as the only valid value in society. As a nation, we see our work as a symbol of uprightness, honesty, and strength. We see the homeless, poor, and unemployed as having done something wrong, or lazy, or both. If your parents instilled that value of working hard for your goals, no matter what they are, the thoughts have crossed your mind at some point in your life that someone must have done something wrong to be laid off, fired, homeless, poor, or generally in a poor state of affairs. Guaranteed. The only way one cannot feel this way is if one has been dragged through the proverbial wringer themselves and had to be that person who is poor, homeless, oppressed, or otherwise fallen into bad times. Do we take our judgment about entitlement to extremes? I ask myself that often. I go to a yearly conference where dozens of people arrive to a site and live in a cooperative atmosphere for days at a time. Living in dormitory settings and eating meals family buffet style, it's expected that everyone participates in the setup, cleanup, and maintenance of the site. No one is exempt from the expectation except the infirm or very senior or aged attendees. In general, this seems to work very well. People are cooperative, happy to help, and understand not only the value of many hands make light work, but also industry or work are good for us overall. People feel better when they are participating and joining in the creation of a harmonious and giving space. When 20 people clean up, it means more time spent for everyone in other activities. The group is happy and the environment is uplifting. You all know what I'm going to say here. There is no perfection and no paradise. There are always one or two people who struggle with these cooperative works or shared space concepts. They place all their items in the showers of the bathroom that is shared with 10 people. They lock the bathroom door, restricting access for those same 10 people who would also need the toilets or showers which are shared. They rarely do the dishes and almost never look around for what work might need to be done. They don't even ask if they can help. They just disappear for their personal time. After all, they're on vacation, aren't they? They expect the locals to help with the rides, directions, or general questions, and to provide assistance at moment's notice with little regard for what that person might actually be doing at that moment. They see other people's time as their own, not something for which to be grateful. In short, they do not think about the other person before making their requests. They do not see the other person as valuable as they are. They might be the gentlest soul in the world, used to working hard at home. However, at these conferences, there's a quote-unquote sense of entitlement that seems to permeate their actions. The proper thing to do is to point this out to them and help them understand how their behavior impacts others. As a member of the community during this time, it's my job to do that. I believe it's all our jobs to do that. I fail. Others fail. The person continues to see their behavior as acceptable, and others continue to see their behavior as intrusive and rude. This breeds resentment, gossip, and ill will. I've felt that resentment grow, and I ask myself silently, don't they see what they're doing? They are wrecking this for everyone. That might be a little dramatic, but the resentment does grow. I make assumptions that they're lazy, acting entitled, or just clueless. When it finally erupts, it comes off as condescending, belittling, and not very respectful of the other person. Conversely, it does no good to ignore it. I do not want to be that person who says, people are people, and they will always be that way. That's condescending in another way. By not offering the person the information necessary to learn and grow, you're saying that they are not capable, intelligent human beings. You are demeaning them by dismissing their behavior. In fact, you are enabling the entitlement. Obviously, as I stated above, the right thing to do is to point out the behavior and talk about its impact. My general way of doing this is pointing out the behavior, listening to them and their responses, showing how it impacts others, and providing a few possible ways to approach the issue. I try to approach it as a discussion rather than an admonishment, at least the first time, maybe even the second time. Yet I always have that fear of bringing something up to someone and having them be upset. Indeed, this is the reason most of us don't do it in the first place. We think we are one of three things. We are not responsible, we're acting beyond our authority, or we're going to upset people. Tough. At least, that's what I tell myself. It's bravado, and I stumble. But I have to just do it. Practice makes perfect. The first steps are always the hardest. For me, approaching entitlement as a discussion rather than corrective behavior seems to be the right answer. I have to frame the words that come out of my mouth in such a way to help correct the situation, not inflame passions. I know that everyone doesn't work that way. My hope is to have understanding about impact, rather than to just blindly correct a behavior. If someone is chastised, they tend to only associate the behavior with that specific environment. If a discussion ensues, they see their actions in the broader context, their lives, and thus make the leap of approaching all activities with the mindset that steers away from entitlement. What I think is true for this conference might also be true for the wider society and our day-to-day lives. While we're not living in dormitories and sharing food at every meal, I think the path of discussion rather than accusation feels more correct, more productive, perhaps more human. I personally tend to get mad when someone expects me to jump at their call without even a hello, or they infringe on the shared space with their demands and wants. If I can take a breath and think for a moment before engaging, I might be able to leverage that pivotal moment and create something positive. It doesn't always work. Traffic is a great example, but I hope that I'm making progress. Thinking before speaking is always a challenge, but one worth jumping into. Not everyone will get it. Some of those I call out will be embarrassed enough by their actions to be mad with me for pointing it out. Some will cry and think I'm calling them awful people. Some will ignore the guidance or hate me for being arrogant enough to think I'm better than them or just plain shrug their shoulders and walk away. It shouldn't stop any of us from trying to address these things that would hold us all back from being better people and better citizens. The community we strive to improve is the one with which we are actively involved. That is our friends, neighbors, and co-workers. As Freemasons, our behavior away from our lodge is equally as important as our time within the lodge. We're taught how to behave with one another, including the ability to address concerns with a fellow brother directly and with virtue. Shouldn't we afford the rest of our community the benefit of our lessons learned? That is part of helping humanity improve, I think. It doesn't make it easy when the rest of the world doesn't play by the same rules. It also doesn't exempt us from facing the challenges and the hard work ahead. If we dislike entitlement so much and we resent the people who fall into that mode of being, what are we doing to combat it? What are we doing to improve it? Whether it is head-to-head conversation or immersion in supporting an organization like Habitat for Humanity or mentoring for job training programs, it behooves us to be the examples of working hard to show the meaning of real service, gratitude, and entitlement. How can we help people help themselves instead of being victims? How does being a victim benefit anyone personally or societally? Maybe we can take back the word entitlement to mean what it initially or originally meant. Quote, the amount to which a person has a right, the fact of having a right to something, end quote. What is a right, and to what do we each have a right? What are your thoughts on entitlement and rights? Is a study of the human right in order? Or rights in general? What do you think? As always, I am grateful for your views and opinions. Kristen Wilson Slack, May 10th, 2017, blog.philosophicalsociety.org. I'll have links back to this paper as well in the show notes, but I really think it's an interesting question because the second we start talking about something like this, it becomes immediately politicized. But we're not talking about that at all. We're talking about the day-to-day practical side of Freemasonry, using a Freemason's ideals, using the concepts we learn in our everyday life, practically, in your day-to-day, when you go to work, with your fellow students, with your family at home. How do we bring the Masonic virtues of being on the level and correcting action in a friendly and brotherly way into our lives? I thought the author did a really nice job putting it together. Whether or not I agree with her sentiments is another thing altogether. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. I think there's some things in here that I don't quite agree with and some that I do. But I'll tell you one thing. It's always a good thing to think about what you're going to say, predict how the person will act when you tell them, and then think about it again before you go into a situation. And a good friend, Dave, who I met recently, told me about this great concept called steel manning. We listen, we repeat back to get the confirmation that we understand what somebody's saying before we have a rebuttal. And it opens up this line of communication. And so if you're going to talk to somebody about entitlement or something along those lines that the author was talking about, then this will help. Because we can bring it up, we can listen to them, and address those things directly instead of thinking about how we're going to rebuttal them while they're still talking. All right. So our last piece for this week is called Masonic Education. It's by E.H. Van Patten, medical doctor, Dayton, Washington, past grandmaster in the state of Washington. Education is the effect on the mind of man of his own experience and that of others. Memory is the essential part of the mind, for without it, no comparisons can be made, and hence no growth of mind. All knowledge must come through our senses. Without sensation, we cannot know of our existence or of anything external to us. Masonry, if rightly understood, is a school, an epitome of life. An entered apprentice, as the operative mason must first learn to form the stones of a building before he can learn their uses. As a fellow craft, he must learn to place the stones in the proper places, to see that they are level and plumb, to estimate the stress that will be placed upon them, and to cement them in his general mass. He must not only study the columns and supports of the building, but also its adornments. He must know the uses to which the building is to be put and conform to the general design. The columns are merely for support and adornment, and are not the essentials of the structure. In Masonry, the columns are but symbols. That which lies beyond them is the real building, and that must be known or all effort is a failure. All of this must be known by the fellow craft, and this alone can fit him for the next step. Age and wisdom can only come after long study and research. The true artist must know how to use language in order to understand that which is told him. He must learn to use language in order to impart his knowledge to others, and we call this rhetoric. Also, he must learn to separate the true from the false. This we call logic. He ought to know about the earth on which he lives, its structure, its surface, and its relationship of land and sea. Behind this, he ought to know the history of the rocks which compose the earth, the forces which elevate mountains and level the plains. In other words, beyond this symbol of geography lies the world of study for the neophyte to conquer. All this is connected directly with the planet on which we live, but now he must turn his attention to the heavens and a study of the sun, the moon, and the stars. He must learn their relations to each other, their distances from us and from each other, their orbits, and what holds them in their course. This symbol is named astronomy, but in order to pursue this study, he must also know how to use that higher part of mathematics we call geometry. All these things must be conquered before he is ready to enter the middle chamber. Hence, we see the allegory of the second degree, and it deals directly through symbols with the proper education of the individual, and these things are essential for him, really, to enter that stage which is denominated wisdom. The ritual is but the doorway to the temple of masonry. He who lingers at the doorway never sees the beauty of that which lies beyond. The mere ritualist is one who points to the symbol, but rarely to that which lies beyond. He looks at the beautiful landscape through a clean plate glass window, is scarcely aware of the glass, but sees only the beautiful view. But let the glass become soiled and be grimed, and he sees only the glass. Such are the pure ritualists, and we need more glass cleaners in our lodges. The above scattered thoughts remind us that masonry is but a school for the individual. Our obligations are individual and not pertaining to the duties of the lodge. It teaches us that we owe duties first to self and family because it is for the good of all. Our duties are also individual and must not be confused with masonry any more than with religion. Masonry does not pretend to act of itself, but teaches the individual how to live and act for the best interests of all men. And that last piece came out of the June 1942 Square and Compass magazine, a journal for masonry established 1892. I'm really loving these, and I hope you don't mind that I'm reading from them. There's some really great gems in these old books. But that is it for this week. I invite you to please check out all of the Please check out Masonic Legacy Society if you so choose. Don't forget about Midnight Freemasons, publishing 3 articles every single week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. You know, this week I did not post the article I was going to post because I'm not done with it yet. I ran a survey on the Winding Stairs and a few other places. I said, which occult profile series should I run next? And you know who's winning with, like, a lot of votes is A.E. Waite. And that's great, but there's a lot to cover and a lot to condense. So I'm working hard on that, and that will come out soon. I want you all to know that I have not forgotten about it. And that's it. So I hope if you came out to the Southeastern Masonic Symposium for Education and we hung out, I hope you had a great time. I'm sure I had a great time. And I'll see you all perhaps at Grand Haven Lodge. I think I'm doing a presentation there on the 11th. If not, I'll be doing the Masonic Pub Crawl, Freemasonry in America and its Colonial Tavern Beginnings up at La Crosse Masonic Center in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I'll be doing that on the 23rd of March. So, until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.